Yeah, that means we can begin. We got stuck at beliefs and practices, not a bad, phrase. Yeah, good. Then we have the next thing.
As the prohibition of the use of flesh, meat, and milk at one meal, the Hebdomadary Symposium of Incoordinately Abstract, perfervidly concrete mercantile co-ex-religionist ex-compatriots, the circumcision of male infants, the supernatural character of Judaic scripture, the ineffability of the Tetragrammaron, the sanctity of the Sabbath. How do these beliefs and practices now appear to him? Not more rational than they had then appeared, not less rational than other beliefs and practices now appeared. What first reminiscence had he of Rudolf Blum, deceased? Rudolf Blum, deceased, narrated to his son, Leopold Blum, aged 6, a retrospective arrangement of migrations and settlements in and between Dublin, London, Florence, Milan, Vienna, Budapest, Jean Bartholet, with statements of satisfaction, his grandfather having seen Maria Theresa, Emperor of Austria, Queen of Hungary, with commercial advice, having taken care of pence, the pounds having taken care of themselves. Leopold Blum, aged 6, had accompanied these narrations by constant consultation of a geographical map of Europe, political, and by suggestions for the establishment of affiliated business premises in the various centres mentioned. Had time equally but differently obliterated the memory of these migrations in narrator and listener? In narrator, by the access of years and in consequence of the use of narcotic toxin, in listener, by the access of years and in consequence of the action of distraction upon vicarious experiences. What idiosyncrasies of the narrator were concomitant products of amnesia? Occasionally he ate without having previously removed his hat. Occasionally he drank voraciously the juice of gooseberry fool from an inclined plate. Occasionally he removed from his lips the traces of food by means of a lacerated envelope or other accessible fragment of paper. What two phenomena of senescence were more frequent? The myopic digital calculation of coins, eructation consequent upon repletion. What object offered partial consolation for these reminiscences? The endowment policy, the bank passbook, the certificate of the possession of scrip.
Yeah, as that takes up beliefs and practices, the prohibition of the use of flesh meat and milk at one meal. You know, they have to be separated. The Hebdomadary weekly symposium, that means common drinking, and it doesn't mean alcohol. I don't really know what are these gatherings, what they drink, tea or whatever, of incoordinately abstract, a bit old, perfervidly concrete mercantile co-ex religionists. So these were the men that had the faith but no longer, as Blum, ex-compatriots, not living in Israel. The circumcision of male infants, we know that. The supernatural character of Judaic scripture. Of course, scriptures are always supernatural. The ineffability of the tetragrammaton. The word for Yahweh has 4 letters, only consonants, and you're not allowed to pronounce them. Ineffable. What you cannot say. And so you have substitutes in it, but you're not supposed to quote the name of God. And of course, the sanctity of the Sabbath, the holy day. How did these beliefs and practices now appear to him? Not more rational than I had then appeared. Not less rational than other beliefs and practices now appeared. There's a kind of resignation room. They are, people have all kinds of beliefs. What first remission had he of Rudolf Blum, deceased? So these are memories of his father, and we had something before. Rudolf Blum, deceased, narrated, and you see in this chapter, it's narrated and not told. It was son Leopold, age 6. A retrospective arrangement, that's one of those motives, of migrations and settlements in and between. And on the previous page, we had that last time, again, the order of migration. Here it's from, it's looking backwards. Dublin, London, Florence, Milan. We didn't have quite the same thing. Milan, Vienna, Budapest, Szombathely. So he came from Szombathely, where he lived, to Budapest, Vienna, and then through Italy. So these would be the migrations. His grandfather, having seen Maria Theresia, Empress of Austria, Queen of Hungary, with commercial advice, obviously was thrifty as Blum is, economic, having taken care of pence, the pound having taken care of himself. And you see, this is a kind of the proverb, if you take care of the pence, the pound will take care of himself, is taken at face value, literally. Leopold Blum, age 6, had accompanied these narrations by constant consultation of a geographical map of Europe, political, and by suggestion for the establishment of affiliated business premises in the various centres mentioned. So, obviously, the boy Blum had all kinds of plans. Had time equally, but differently, obliterated the memory of these migrations in narrator and listener. In narrator, that's Blum, by the access of years and in consequence of the use of narcotic toxin. Joyce's father had all the pains and he took some painkillers. In listener, by the access of years and in consequence of the action of distraction upon vicarious experiences. Vicarious experiences, I don't think the word vicarious hasn't yet made it into German. That is, you take part in the experience of others that you're not. If I read an adventure story, I become vicariously one of these. So that's vicarious experience. What idiosyncrasies of the narrator were concomitant products of amnesia, concomitant accompanying that amnesia. Occasionally he ate without having previously removed his hat. Occasionally he drank voraciously the juice of gooseberry food. And when you do something with gooseberry, that's called gooseberry food. From the kitchen, and from an inclined plate. Occasionally, he removed from his lips the traces of food by means of a lacerated envelope, again, lacerate rather than torn, the scientific language, and other accessible fragments of paper. What two phenomena of senescence? Phenomena of senescence, we would say signs of aging, were more frequent. And here you can see the scientific language, the myopic, where you don't quite see too well, digital, meaning with the hands, calculation of coins, you would have done this. And then the next one, I think, takes for most educated English readers, even the a little act of translation, erectation consequent upon repletion, belching after meals. And it sounds so much more thin when you say at the meal, could you please contain your erectations? what object offered partial consolation for these reminiscences? The endowment policy, he got something. The bank passport, the certificate of the possession of script. Script, I must look that up. No, I don't even see it. Must be something illegal. Yeah, I think that's where we are. Well, then we go on.
Reduced Bloom by cross multiplication of reverses of fortune, from which these supports protected him, and by elimination of all positive values to a negligible, negative, irrational, unreal quantity. Successively, in descending helotic order, poverty, that of the outdoor hawker of imitation jewelry, the dun for the recovery of bad and doubtful debts, the poor rate and deputy cess collector, mendicancy, that of the fraudulent bankrupt with negligible assets paying 1 4 in the pound, sandwichman, distributor of throwaways, nocturnal vagrant, insinuating sycophant, maimed sailor, blind stripling, superannuated bailiff's man, marfeast, lickplate, spoilsport, pickthank, eccentric public laughingstock seated on bench of public park under discarded perforated umbrella, destitution, the inmate of Old Man's House, Royal Hospital, Kilmainham, the inmate of Simpson's Hospital for reduced but respectable men permanently disabled by gout or want of sight, nadir of misery, the aged, impotent, disenfranchised, rate-supported, moribund, lunatic pauper, with which attendant indignities, the unsympathetic indifference of previously amiable females, the contempt of muscular males, the acceptance of fragments of bread, the simulated ignorance of casual acquaintances, the latration of illegitimate, unlicensed vagabond dogs, the infantile discharge of decomposed vegetable missiles worth little or nothing, or less than nothing.
Reduced Bloom. Now, Bloom has been thinking what he would do if he were rich. Now he goes the other way, if he became impoverished. Reduced Bloom by cross multiplication of reverses of fortune, from which the support he protected him, support, because he has some money in the bank, and by elimination of all positive values to a negligible, negative, irrational, unreal quantity. This is a potential downhill progression to poverty. Successively, in descending helotic order, helotic is Greek relating to slaves, poverty, that of the outdoor hawker of imitation jewelry. This is what Bloom's father did, and Bloom himself when he was young. The dun for the recovery of bad and doubtful debts, if you have to collect debts from Irishmen unwilling to pay. Like the narrator of Cyclops. The poor rate and deputy cess collector. Poor rate and cess collector has probably to do with the sewages. Then, mendicancy. That of the fraudulent bankrupt with negligible assets paying 1/4 in the pound, I suppose, if you're bankrupt, that's what it is. Sandwich men, we saw those heelers walking the streets. Distributor of throwaways, Bloom picked up a handbill from somebody. Obviously, it's not a good job when you have to distribute those. Nocturnal vagrant, insinuating sycophant, somebody who sucks up to you and gets some money. Maimed sailor, we have seen one. Blind stripling, we've seen one. Superannuated old bailiff's man. And then you're all kinds of Marfeast, somebody who spells the firm, lickplate, spoilsport, pickthank. Then, eccentric public laughingstock, seated on bench of public park under discarded perforated umbrella. Destitution. See, there are degrees of poverty. The inmate of Old Man's House, Royal Hospital,
There were some charities where those who were really poor could at least have some food in a bed. Kilmainham. The inmate of Simpson's Hospital for reduced but respectable men. I think it's a lovely Victorian description. Reduced but respectable men, permanently disabled by gout or want of sight. It's a really Victorian place. Nadir of misery, the aged, impotent, disfranchised, rate-supported, moribund, lunatic, pauper. That is the worst that could happen to you. With what attendant indignities you would be exposed to, all kinds of indignities. The unsympathetic indifference of previously amiable females, they would not to know you. The contempt of muscular males, the acceptance of fragments of bread, the simulated ignorance of casual acquaintances. Then the next one is a nice one, and I think it shows the vocabulary when you come to the latration. I'm fairly sure few of us, me included, know or knew what latration is until you come to dogs, and then you know it's either barking or biting. It's actually a Latin type of word for barking. I think if you know Italian, you know that. But for us, it is a foreign word, I think. And I think you only use it jocularly. Yep. By the way, when some dog barks at you, do you worry whether it's licensed or not? The infantile discharge of decomposed vegetal missiles. They would throw rotten vegetables at you. Worth little or nothing, nothing or less than nothing. Think now we have.
By what could such a situation be precluded? By decease, change of state. By departure, change of place. Which preferably? The latter by the line of least resistance. What considerations rendered it not entirely undesirable? Constant cohabitation impeding mutual toleration of personal defects. The habit of independent purchase increasingly cultivated. The necessity to counteract by impermanent sojourn the permanence of arrest. What considerations rendered it not irrational? The parties concerned uniting had increased and multiplied, which being done, offspring produced and educed to maturity. The parties, if now disunited, were obliged to reunite for increase and multiplication, which was absurd to form by reunion the original couple of uniting parties, which was impossible. What considerations rendered it desirable? The attractive character of certain localities in Ireland and abroad, as represented in general geographical maps of polychrome design, or in special ordnance survey charts by employment of scale numerals and hackures.
By what could such a situation be precluded? By disease, change of state, by departure, change of place, yeah, if you die or if you go away. Which preferably? The latter, by the line of least resistance. What consideration rendered departure not entirely undesirable? Constant cohabitation impeding mutual toleration of personal defects. Yeah, the longer you're married or get used to, the less you tolerate them, something like that. The habit of independent purchase increasingly cultivated. They would go shopping, marriage partners, separately. The necessity to counteract by impermanent sojourn the permanence of arrest. I must say, I don't quite get that. Impermanent sojourn by permanence of arrest. Sorry, I'm in the same boat. What consideration the rendered departure not irrational? The parties concerned, uniting, had increased and multiplied. As you know, this is a biblical injunction, Old Testament, increase and multiply. Which being done, offspring produced and educed to maturity. You see, produced and educed is a kind of corresponding Latin word. And of course, this is also the basis of education that depends on the Latin word educare, to maturity. The parties, if not disunited, and you see here all these correlatives, uniting, disunited, were obliged to reunite for increase and multiplication, which was absurd. The form by reunion of the original couple of united parties, which was impossible. So, what consideration rendered departure desirable? The attractive character of certain localities in Ireland and abroad, as represented in general geographical maps of polychrome design or in special ordnance survey charts. There were ordnance survey maps just in black and white of the whole country. Survey charts by employment of scale numerals and azures. You know, in these maps, you have the lines that indicate elevation, mountains and things like that. We know that from Swiss maps. Now,
in Ireland, the cliffs of Moher, the windy wilds of Connemara, Loch Ney with submerged petrified city, the Giant's Causeway, Fort Camden and Fort Carlisle, the Golden Vale of Tipperary, the islands of Arran, the pastures of Royal Meath, Bridges Elm in Kildare, the Queen's Island Shipyard in Belfast, the Salmon Leap, the lakes of Killarney. Abroad, Ceylon, with Spice Garden supplying tea to Thomas Kernan, agent for Pulbrook, Robertson & Co., 2 Mincing Lane, London, EC, 5 Dame Street, Dublin. Jerusalem, the Holy City, with Mosque of Omar and Gate of Damascus, goal of aspiration. The Straits of Gibraltar, the unique birthplace of Marion Tweedy. The Parthenon, containing statues, nude Grecian divinities. The Wall Street money market, which controlled international finance. The Plaza de Toros at La Linea, Spain, where O'Hara of the Camerons had slain the bull. Niagara, over which no human being had passed with impunity. The land of the Eskimos, eaters of soap. The forbidden country of Tibet, from which no traveller returns. The Bay of Naples, to see which was to die. The Dead Sea. Under what guidance, following what signs? At sea, septentrional, by night the pole star, located at the point of intersection of the right line from beta to alpha in Ursa Major, produced and divided externally at omega, and the hypotenuse of the right-angled triangle formed by the line alpha-omega, so produced, and the line alpha-delta of Ursa Major. On land meridional, a bispherical moon revealed in imperfect varying phases of lunation through the posterior interstices of the imperfectly occluded skirt of a Carnot's negligent perambulating female, a pillar of the cloud by day. What public advertisement would divulge the occultation of the departed? £5 reward, lost, stolen or strayed from his residence, 7 Hector Street, missing gent about 40, answering to the name of Bloom, Leopold, Poldy, height 5'9.5", full build, olive complexion, may have since grown a beard, when last seen was wearing a black suit. Above sum will be paid for information leading to his discovery.
So we have Ireland first. In Ireland, these are all the tourist places. The Cliffs of Moher, the windy wild of Connemara in the west, Loch Nee, with submerged petrified city. It's one of these lakes, Loch Nee, and there's a story that there's a submerged city is there, like Atlantis, the kind of thing. The Giant's Causeway is a series of octagonal basalt stones in the north of Ireland. Fort Camden, Fort Carlisle. The Golden Vale of Tipperary. the Island of Arran, the pastures of Royal Meath, Bridget Elm in Kildare. It's funny, Bridget Elm in Kildare. Kildare means the church of the oak. And here it's Elm and Oak. Then the Queen Island shipyard in Belfast. And you know these shipyards were very famous. They built the Titanic, the Salmon Leap, the Lakes of Killarney. Then abroad, Ceylon, with Spice Garden supplying tea to Thomas Kernan, agent for Pulvergrove and Company, to Minchingley, London, EC5, Dame Street, Dublin. So tea, and Tom Kernan deals with tea, we know that. And Bloom has been looking at the window with Ceylon tea. Jerusalem, the holy city, with Mosque of Omar and Gate of Damascus, goal of aspiration. The Straits of Gibraltar, the unique birthplace of Marion Tweedy. Now, of course, again, she wasn't born in the gate in the Straits of Gibraltar, but in Gibraltar. So there's always a kind of near miss. The Parthenon, containing statues of nude Grecian divinities. And of course, Bloomer wanted to look at the backside of Greek divinities, but you know that the Parthenon is named after Pallas Athene, and Parthenos means virgin. So there's also a slight ripple there. In Wall Street, money market, which controls international finance. The Plaza de Toros at La Línea, Spain. La Línea is just on the Spanish side of Gibraltar. There's a border, and it's a place where from Gibraltar you could go and where there would be bullfights. Where, that must have been an occasion, where O'Hara of the Camerons had slain the bull. And you realize the name is O'Hara, that's an Irish name. And there are some Irish people in Spain, you know that. And Niagara, over which no human being had passed with impunity. I think at the time of 1904, that was already no more true, but it was said once. The land of the Eskimos, eaters of soap. Now, I wish somebody could find out where these rumors come from. No idea, but there must have been something in existence. Then the forbidden country of Tibet, from which no traveler returns, which again is not true, of course. It's that Shakespeare quotation, from which no traveler returns, which is really death. The Bay of Naples, to see which was to die. And again, you see that the proverb, to see nature and then die, as a kind of wish before you end, is taken at literary values and said, if you see Naples, you die, which will turn it into a dead city, the Dead Sea. Under what guidance, following what sign, how would you get around it? At sea. Septentrional, by night, the pole star, the leading star, located at the point of intersection, the right line from beta to alpha nos and major, produced and derived externally at omega and the hypotenuse of the right angle triangle formed by the line alpha to produce the alpha. So this is astronomy, that's probably correct then, yeah. And of course, it's how ships were guided in the old times. On land, meridional, biospherical moon revealed in imperfect various phases of lunation, you don't always see the center of the lun, through the posterior interstice of the imperfectly occluded skirt of a Carnot's negligible perambling female, while the hemisphere of the moon have often, and even here too, compared with the buttocks of a woman. You know that. A Carnot's fleshy, negligent, perambulating female, a pillar of the cloud by day. The pillar of the cloud by day guided the Jews and their exodus from Egypt to the Holy Land. There was a pillar of the cloud by day. And you realize these are all quite different things. This is biblical. What public advertisement would divulge the occultation of the departed? If Bloom were disappeared, there would be a notice for his occultation. He has been occulted. You don't know when you see it anymore. Interesting of occultation is a word used in relation to the moon, when the moon is occulted by the sun or something like that. £5 reward, so that's the value. Lost, stolen, or strayed from his residence on Meckle Street. Missing gent, about 40. Answering to the name of Bloom, Leopold, Poldy. Height, 5 feet, 9.5 inches. You heard that. Full build, olive complexion. This one of the few times when we know that Bloom is a bit darker, olive, than the usually very white-haired Irish. May have since grown a beard, when last seen was wearing a black suit. Above sum will be paid for information leading to his discovery. So he imagines an ad lost.
What universal binomial denominations would be his as entity and non-entity, assumed by any or known to none, every man or no man? What tributes his? Honor and gifts of strangers, the friends of every man, a nymph immortal, beauty, the bride of no man. Would the departed never nowhere nohow reappear? Ever he would wander, self-compelled, to the extreme limit of his cometary orbit, beyond the fixed stars and variable suns and telescopic planets, astronomical waifs and strays, to the extreme boundary of space, passing from land to land, among peoples, amid events. Somewhere imperceptibly he would hear, and somehow reluctantly, some compelled, obey the summons of recall. Whence, disappearing from the constellation of the Northern Crown, he would somehow reappear, reborn, above Delta in the constellation of Cassiopeia, and after incalculable eons of peregrination, return an estranged avenger, a wreaker of justice on malefactors, a dark crusader, a sleeper awakened, with financial resources, by supposition, surpassing those of Rothschild or of the Silver King. What would render such return irrational? An unsatisfactory equation between an exodus and return in time through reversible space, and an exodus and return in space through irreversible time. What play of forces inducing inertia rendered departure undesirable? The lateness of the hour, rendering procrastinatory, the obscurity of the night, rendering invisible, the uncertainty of thoroughfares, rendering perilous, the necessity for repose, obviating movement, the proximity of an occupied bed, obviating research, the anticipation of warmth, human, tempered with coolness, linen, obviating desire and rendering desirable. The statue of Narcissus, sound without echo, desired desire. What advantages were possessed by an occupied?
Oh, yeah, I think we stopped here. What universal binominal to denominations would be his as entity and non-entity? Assumed by any or known to none, every man or no man. And you realize Bloom was conceived as a bit of every man, or no man is, of course, then the opposite. It's also in Homer. What tribute is? Honor and gifts of strangers, the friends of every man, a nymph, immortal beauty, the bride of no man. He's obviously dreaming of a kind of nymph, which is Greek for a young girl, immortal, the bride of no man. Imagination then. Would the departed never, nowhere, nohow reappear? And here it's interesting that you suddenly get nowhere, nohow, you get these Germanic words. And of course, Germanic negatives don't often cancel each other out as they do. So imagine he would be in the cosmos. Ever he would wander, self-compelled, to the extreme limit of his cometary orbit, beyond the fixed stars and variable suns and telescopic planets, astronomical waifs and strays. That's the kind of the debris that's floating around. And Bloom, of course, has read that in his book on astronomy. Among people and events, somewhere imperceptibly, he would hear, and somewhere reluctantly, sun-compelled, obey the summons of recall. He would come back. Whence, disappearing from the Kodesh, the northern crown, he would somehow reappear reborn above Delta in the constellation of Cassiopeia. Now, this Delta, of course, is something that Stephen has mentioned, that the star appeared in this constellation roughly at the time of Shakespeare. So this is a kind of link of which, of course, Bloom doesn't know anything. And after incalculable eons of peregrination, return, and now we get all these stories of returned travelers. A sleeper awakened, like Rip Van Winkle, with a wreaker of justice on malefactors. And you know, there were current novels of people who disappeared and then came back to revenge something. A dark crusader, a sleeper awakened, and I think that's a story, with financial resources, by his position, surpassing those of Roth of the Silver King, you would come back very rich. What would render such return irrational? The unsatisfactory equation being exodus and return. Exodus, going out, but you know that Exodus is also the book in the Bible of the Jews. And return in time through reversible space, you can go either direction, and then exodus and return in space through irreversible time. You cannot reverse time. You cannot go backward. What play of forces inducing inertia render departure undesirable? To be late in the day or at night to go into the cosmos. The lateness of the hour rendering procrastinatory, so you would say. The obscurity of the night rendering invisible. You wouldn't see anything. You wouldn't be invisible. The uncertainty of thoroughfares rendering perilous. The necessity for repose obviating movement. You're too tired to move. The proximity of an occupied bed obviating research. The anticipation of warmth, human, tempered with coolness, linen, obviating desire and rendering desirable. The statue of Narcissus, sound with her echo, desired desire. Now here for the first time we learn, I think it's for the first time, that the Blooms have a statue of Narcissus. You know Narcissus, the one who was in love only with himself. And he looked at himself in the water, and the nymph Echo fell in love with him, but she could not speak to him. She could only repeat what he was saying. And he was only interested in looking at himself. So it's one of these classical, tragic stories that you find in Metamorphoses. So Echo is also a minor goddess then, the Narcissus. What advantages? Well, possessed by an occupied as distinct from an unoccupied bird. The removal of nocturnal solitude. The superior quality of human, mature, female, to inhuman hot water jar calefaction. A human body is better than a hot water bottle. The stimulation of matutinal contact. Contact in the morning. The economy of mounting done on the premise in the case of trousers accurately folded and placed length between the spring mattress stripe and the woolen mattress biscuit second. This has to do with the story that men, to press their trousers, would put them under the mattress. Don't think it's done anymore now. Biscuit. And then also the technology of mattresses, woolen mattress, biscuit section. And now you have an interesting thing, and that is, a recapitulation of the day. We had several before, that is the last one. What past consecutive causes before rising, pre-apprehended of accumulated fatigue, they bloom before rising, silently recapitulate. So before he gets up to undress and go to bed, he runs through the day. And you will see that's quite an amusing, I say, recapitulation here. The preparation of breakfast. And in parentheses, you have a reference to the Old Testament. Burnt offering was a sacrifice to God. Burnt offering, but you realize Bloom also burnt his kidney. Intestinal congestion and premeditative defectation. In a beautiful world, premeditative defectation. What you think as you sit on the toilet seat, which we saw. We saw Bloom reading the paper. And that's called Holy of Holies. That's also in the Old Testament. But of course, you can imagine whatever primitive toilet they had could have been referred to as a joke as Holy of Holies. The bath rite, Bloom took a bath, rite of John, that is John the Baptist. The funeral, rite of Samuel. Now, the book of Samuel, I'm quite sure, must contain a death and a funeral, I haven't looked. The advertisement of Alexander Keyes, you see, these are the chapters, the early chapters, Lotus Eaters, Hades, advertisement is earless in the newspaper, and there you have Urim and Thummim. Now, if you look in the Bible, you find, in fact, Urim and Thummim, in is a Hebrew plural always, and they are what they call breastplates. Don't ask me what the breastplate is, and nobody quite knows what they do. I really looked it up, and it's not clear what significance that has. That doesn't mean that Joyce didn't think of one, but that is a bit odd. The unsubstantial lunch, rite of Melchizedek, where I'm sure some eating is done. The visit to a museum and natural library, holy place. The book hunt, and here we learn something that we did not read in the Wandering Rocks. The book handle on Bedford, the Royal Merchants of Wellington Key, Shinchot Torah, and that is the recital of the law, the Torah, the holy writing. The music in the Orma Hotel, Shira Shirim, is the Song of Songs, the Song of Solomon. And as you may know, it is the most erotic chapter, mildly erotic, of the Bible. The altercation with a truculent troglodyte in Bernard Tiernan's premises, Holocaust. This is the adventure in Cyclops. It is here called Holocaust, which didn't have the meaning it has now. It means a complete burning. That was also a sacrifice. You find it in the Old Testament. So you, and I don't really know why it refers to Kiernan, where nothing was burnt, I think. So you must again detract the modern meaning here. A blank period of time, including a car drive, a visit to a house of mourning, a leave taking, wilderness. Now, this is the visit to the house of the Dignams. And that, as you know, is not described in Ulysses. And that's why it here says a blank period of time, that is a blank period in the story of Ulysses. So Ulysses here reflects to its own structure. So that's again a meta comment. The eroticism produced from feminine exhibitionism, right of Onan. So this, of course, is Nausicaa, the masturbation on the beach. Though you all know the word onanism, but it is not quite correctly applied. Onan didn't find sexual pleasure. He didn't want to impregnate his second wife or something, and then he spilled his hand. So it's not quite. So we had to see many of the words we use, like onanism is part of it, are not quite correct. And I think that's also a reminder of Joyce, the language teacher, that so many derivations are not really accurate. This in the chapter that wants to be accurate. The prolonged delivery in a pure form, heave offering, that is also an Old Testament sacrifice. But I think of heave must have some relation to pregnancy. The visit to the disorderly house of Mrs. Bella Cohen in New Tyrant Street, lower, and subsequent brawl and chance made in Beaver Street, Armageddon. So this is the Circe chapter, and that's called an Armageddon, and that is, I think, a revelation when everything, in Revelation, the battle of the end, an Armageddon is the end. Nocturnal perambulation to and from the cavern, so the Bud Bridge, that's it, the previous chapter, Atonement, when the two, Bloom and Stephen, are together again. So you see you have here another tabulation or orientation. This time it's not Homeric, but it is Old Testament. It's the Hebrew tradition. As though just what you indicate, the Homeric coordinates are not the only possible one. You could have different ones, alternative ones. Yeah, that's, I think, how far we got. Yep.
Yes, we can go on with the algebra.
What self-imposed enigma did Bloom, about to rise in order to go, so as to conclude, lest he should not conclude, involuntarily apprehend? The cause of a brief, sharp, unforeseen, heard, loud, lone crack, emitted by the insentient material of a strain-veined timber table. What self-involved enigma did Bloom, risen, going, gathering multicolored, multiform, multitudinous garments, voluntarily apprehending, not comprehend? Who was Mackintosh? What self-evident enigma, pondered with desultory constancy during 30 years, did Bloom now, having effected natural obscurity by the extinction of artificial light, silently, suddenly comprehend. Where was Moses when the candle went out? What imperfections in a perfect day did Bloom, walking silently, successively enumerate? A provisional failure to obtain renewal of an advertisement, to obtain a certain quantity of tea from Thomas Kernan, agent for Pulbrook Robertson & Co., 5 Dame Street, Dublin, and 2 Mincing Lane, London, EC. To certify the presence or absence of posterior rectal orifice in the case of Hellenic female divinities. To obtain admission, gratuitous or paid, to the performance of Lear by Mrs. Banman Palmer at the Gaiety Theatre, 46, 47, 48, 49 South King Street. What impression of an absent face did Bloom arrested silently recall? The face of her father, the late Major Brian Cooper Tweedy, Royal Dublin Fusiliers of Gibraltar and Rehoboth, Dolphin's Barn.
Three short paragraph, and they're all parallel. What self-imposed enigma when you see the three begin in a similar way, they're parallel. What self-imposed enigma, riddle, did Bloom, about to rise, in order to go, so as to conclude, lest he should not conclude, involuntarily apprehend? What did he perceive, apprehend, the course of a brief, sharp, unforeseen, hard, loud, lone crack emitted by the incendiary material of a strainway timber table. Sometimes there's a strange noise from some object that can happen. So this is in the Odyssey, when these kind of things happened, it was always considered an omen. So there's a noise. What self-involved did Bloom, risen, going, gathering, multicolored, multiform, multitudinous garments, voluntarily apprehending, not comprehend. So it's something of Bloom and written going, gathering, and you can see this multiform, multitudinous garments. There's a famous Shakespeare line, multitudinous, things like that. Voluntarily apprehending, not comprehend. And you see here that the word apprehend is taken in the literal sense of taking up, apprendre, taking, whereas comprehend is taken in the figurative sense of understanding. Who was Mackintosh? There's still a riddle, Mackintosh, who is he? It's a very well-known riddle in Joyce circles by Orphan Hubbard. What self-evident enigma pondered with desultory constancy during 30 years did Bloom now, having effected natural obscurity by the extinction of artificial light, turned the light on, that is probably extinguished a candle, silently, suddenly comprehend. Suddenly he understands something that he hasn't solved for him. Where was Moses when the candle went out? You know where Moses was when the candle went out? In the dark. So this is a kind of old joke. Then, what, look, listen to this, imperfection in a perfect day. Now look at the day of Bloom, a perfect day with so many failures, his wife having an affair for the first time, a perfect day. I don't quite know what to make of it, unless you take it grammatically. The tame is now perfected, is gone, it's now behind. Anyway, did Bloom, walking, charged with collectal articles of recent distressed maid wearing apparel, silently, successively enumerate? Now he thinks of the failures of his day. A provisional failure to obtain the renewal of an advertisement. You know, his his job was to get that advertisement for the thing. He doesn't quite know whether it's coming off or not, but probably will. To obtain a certain quantity of tea from Thomas Kernan, he's a tea merchant, and his agent from Pulver, Robert and Company, 5 States in Dublin, and 2 mentioned in London, D.C. So, pedantically, always the addresses are given. No, we don't really care about them. Then the next, to certify the presence or absence of posterior rectal orifice in the case of Hellenic female divinities. Isn't that a nice way of talking about the backsides of Greek goddesses? Mm-hmm. The absence of posterior rectal orifice. Mm-hmm. To obtain admission, gratuitous or paid, to the part of Leah, he thought he might go to the theatre, by which one part of the Gaiety Theatre, and then again you get the whole address thrown in. What impression of an absent face did Bloom, arrested, silently recall? The face of her father, the late Major Brian Tweedy, Royal Dublin Engineer of Gibraltar, and we hold both the Dolphin's Barn. So this is his father-in-law, who, the late Major Brian Tweedy, he was among the Royal Dublin Fusiliers, a regiment in Gibraltar, and he later obviously came to Dublin and lived in Rehoboth Terrace in Dublin.
What recurrent impressions of the same were possible by the hypothesis? Retreating at the terminus of the Great Northern Railway, Amiens Street, with constant uniform acceleration along parallel lines meeting at infinity, if produced, along parallel lines reproduced from infinity with constant uniform retardation at the terminus of the Great Northern Railway, Amiens Street, returning. What miscellaneous effects of female personal wearing apparel were perceived by him? A pair of new inodorous half-silk black ladies' hose, a pair of new violet garters, a pair of outsized ladies' drawers of India mull cut on generous lines, redolent of opopanax, jessamine, and Marathi's Turkish cigarettes, and containing a long bright steel safety pin, folded curvilinear, a camisole de batiste with thin lace border, an accordion underskirt of blue silk morette, all these objects being disposed irregularly on the top of a rectangular trunk, quadruple battened, having capped corners with multicolored labels, initialed on its foreside in white lettering BCT, Brian Cooper Tweedy. What impersonal objects were perceived? A commode, one leg fractured, totally covered by square cretonne cutting, apple design, on which rested a lady's black straw hat. Orange keyed ware, bought of Henry Price, basket, fancy goods, chinaware, and ironmongery manufacturers, 21-22-23 Moore Street, disposed irregularly on the washstand and floor, and consisting of basin, soap dish, and brush tray on the washstand together, pitcher and night article on the floor separate.
What current impressions of the same were possible the hypothesis as follows. Retreating at the terminus of Great Northern Railway, Amiens Street, that's a railway station that they passed, with constant uniform acceleration that we had trained along parallel lines meeting at infinity, and you know parallel, this is the old definition of parallel. The parallels are two lines that meet at infinity, that is, they never meet. So it's this kind of geometrical pedantry. If produced, here produced means, in the original sense, drawn forward, mm-hmm, along parallel lines, reproduced from infinity, with constant uniform retardation at the terminus
of the Great Northern Railway, Amiens Street, returning. So trains go from it and come back to it, not now. What miscellaneous effects of female personal wearing apparel were perceived by him? So that is how Molly disposed of her clothing. A pair of new inodorous half-silk black ladies' hose. That would be stockings of sort. And you realize when it says unodorous, they didn't smell. It seems to imply that he did smell them to find they had no smell. A pair of new violet garters, often mentioned. A pair of outside lazy drawers of India mull, cut on generous lines, redolent of opoponax. That is, I think, a chief perfume. And Murati's Turkish cigarettes, that Bloom found on the piano, remember, and containing a long, bright steel safety pin, folded curvilinear, a camisole of Batiste. Camisole, I think, is a chemise or something like that, of Batiste, with thin lace border, an accordion that has these folds, undercurrent of blue silk moirette. All these objects being disposed irregularly on the top of a rectangular trunk, quadruple battened, having capped corners with multicolored labels initialed on its foreside in white lettering, BCT, Brian Cooper Tweedy, his father-in-law. What impersonal object were perceived? A commode, one leg fractured, totally covered by square cretonne, cutting apple design. And of course it's fractured. Most objects are not new, as we already saw. On which rests the lady's black straw hat. Orange keyed wear. Key is the Greek fret. This kind of ornament consisting of S's that you have. We heard it already in the first Bloom chapter of the Chamber Pot. Orange keyed wear, bought of Henry Price, basket, fancy good china, and ironmonger manufacturer, 21 Moore Street, disposed irregularly on the washstand and floor, consisting of basin, soap dish, and brush tray on the washstand. So you see, there was probably flowing water only in the kitchen and in no other room. And so you had these combinations that you the old time had in hotels still. Pitcher, night article on the floor, separate. So that's that. No.
Bloom's acts. He deposited the articles of clothing on a chair, removed his remaining articles of clothing, took from beneath a bolster at the head of the bed a folded long white nightshirt, inserted his head and arms into the proper apertures of the nightshirt, removed a pillow from the head to the foot of the bed, prepared the bed linen accordingly, and entered the bed. How? With circumspection, as invariably when entering an abode, his own or not his own, with solicitude, the snake spiral springs of the mattress being old, the brass quoits and pendant viper radii loose and tremulous under stress and strain, prudently, as entering a lair or ambush of lust or adder, lightly, the less to disturb, reverently, the bed of conception and of birth, of consummation, of marriage and of breach of marriage, of sleep and of death. What did his limbs, when gradually extended, encounter? New clean bed linen, additional odors, the presence of a human form, female, hers, the imprint of a human form, male, not his. Some crumbs, some flakes of potted meat, recooked, which he removed. If he had smiled, why would he have smiled? to reflect that each one who enters imagines himself to be the first to
We don't hear it, I think. Did you hear anything? No. Okay, then I'll read. There must be something technically wrong. Wait a moment. Bloom's act. He deposited the article of clothing on a chair, removed the remaining article of clothing, took from beneath the bolster at the head of the bed a folded long white nightshirt, inserted his head and arms into the proper apertures of the nightshirt, removed the pillow from the head to the foot of the bed, prepared the bed linen accordingly, and entered the bed. So Bloom finally, after many delays, enters his bed. How? With circumspection. Careful. As invariable when entering an abode, his own or not his own, with solicitude, the snake spiral springs of the mattress being old, and we know that, the brass quoits and pendant vibrate loose and tremulous and distressed. We know that Bloom, when he talked to Molly, he heard the quoits of the bed jingling. The quoits are mattress rings of sort, and here now we have that again. The brass cord pendant, a viper radio, and you realize that you have snake spiral and viper. It's like, yeah, a bunch of snakes or something like that. So very careful. It's very serpentine, this article. Loose and tremors and distress, prudently as entering a lair or ambush or lost or adders, both snakes, lightly, the less to disturb, reverently, the bed of conception, of birth, of consummation of marriage, and breach of marriage, of sleep, and of death. Just shows how important beds are in our lives. Then, what did his limbs, when gradually extended, encounter? New, clean bed linen. So we know Molly made the bed for the occasion. Additional odors. The presence of a human form, female, hers. Yeah. The imprint of a human form, male, not his. Now, wait a moment. Is that true? So obviously, Boylan has been in the bed, but he must have left for a few hours. And would you still feel the imprint of somebody when no doubt Molly must have been tossing around quite a bit? And I don't think you could feel this. This is imagination, of course. This is not quite apart from the fact when it says, what did his limbs encounter? Limbs don't encounter odors. Human form may not eat some crumbs, some flakes of potted meat. I almost think this is the ultimate insult. You have, remember the advertisement, what is home without plum trees, potted meat, incomplete, with it an abode of bliss. Not only has another man been there are even crumbs in the bed. I think that's about the worst thing, which he removed. If he had smiled, why would he have smiled? That's an interesting question. He didn't smile, but he might have smiled. And if he had, why? To reflect that each one who enters imagines himself the first to enter the bed, whereas he's always the last term of a preceding series. Now, you're the last one of all that went before you, even if the first term of a succeeding one. Each imagining himself to be first, last, only, and alone, whereas neither first nor last, nor only nor alone, in the series, originate and repeated to infinity. So the occupants of a bed. And now is one of the most interesting and problematic catalogues in the whole chapter. What preceding series? Assuming Malvi to be the first Tamil series. Now we know a little bit and we learn later. Malvi was Molly's boyfriend in Gibraltar. And he certainly wasn't in his in her Dublin bed. But the rest are all people that we may know from the novel. Penrose, that was a student who looked in the window. Bartell Darcy, a singer. Professor Goodwin, the old the piano teacher. Julius Mastiansky, a Jewish friend. John Henry Menton, the solicitor who had an iron molly. Father Bernard Corrigan, that would be an Irish priest. Now, we know in the meantime what Irish priests are capable of, but here it's a bit doubtful. A farmer at the Royal Dublin Sources Horse Show. A farmer, in Dublin, there's a horse show each August. And you wonder how a farmer, obviously muscular, would have made it to Johnny's bed. Maggot O'Reilly, Matthew Dillon, William Blake Dillon, Lord Mayor of Dublin, Christopher Callinan, Lenehan. Now, Lenehan, we can verify, because in the 10th chapter, and we read it, of course, Lenehan boasted to McCoy that once, when they were riding home on top of a vehicle in the cold night, with coats on, he had somehow felt around Molly so he had felt her a little bit. And if you know anything about male psychology, men do not underplay their erotic successes, if any shift. So we can dismiss that a little bit. An Italian organ grinder, an unknown gentleman in a Gaiety Theatre, Benjamin Dollard, a singer, Simon Dedalus, Andrew Pitcher-Bork, Joseph Cuff, Wisdom Healy, Alderman John Hooper, Dr. Francis Brady, Father Sebastian of Mount August, a bootblack at the post office, Huge E. Blazes Boylan, so Eastern Swan last time. Now, probably Boylan obviously has been there, but the others that could be taken as a real list of occupants of Molly's bed, and you would realize that for 1904, for a Dublin housewife, that would be worth the Guinness Book of Records. But now we know we can dismiss most of them. It is probably men that had an eye on Molly on several occasions and that had worried him. Of course, the equivalent is in the Odyssey, all the suitors, more than 100, kind of. And in Don Giovanni, it is that famous list of Leporello, how many women Don Giovanni had. So there are something, but we can read it critically. So it's not to be taken at face value. No, that's how we've got.
What were his reflections concerning the last member of this series and late occupant of the bed? Reflections on his vigour, a bounder, corporal proportion, a bill-sticker, commercial ability, a bester, impressionability, a boaster. Why, for the observer, impressionability in addition to vigour, corporal proportion, and commercial ability? Because he had observed with augmenting frequency in the preceding members of the same series the same concupiscence, inflammably transmitted first with alarm, then with understanding, then with desire, finally with fatigue, with alternating symptoms of epicene comprehension and apprehension. With what antagonistic sentiments were his subsequent reflections affected? Envy, jealousy, abnegation, equanimity.
Yeah. Um, what were his reflections concerning the last member of the series and late occupant of the bed? Reflection on his vigour, strong, a bounder, corporal proportion, a bill sticker, since he works in advertising, his employees would stick up bills, commercial ability, a bester, impressionability, a boaster. As you see, all these words begin with B, so there's a kind of phonetic pattern there. Why? For the observer, impressionability, in addition to vigor, corporal proportion, and commercial ability. So why? Because Bloom had observed with augmenting frequency in the preceding members of the same series, the same, told the man, said concupiscence, desire, inflammability, transmitted, first with alarm, then with understanding, then with desire, finally with fatigue, with alternating symptoms of epicene, comprehension, and apprehension. And again, Joyce plays with these words, apprehend and comprehend. Epicene, by the way, means both male and female, which, again, I can't quite see through. Comprehension, apprehension. It's one of these things that, again, remain a bit cryptic. With what antagonistic sentiments were his subsequent reflections affected? Envy, jealousy, abnegation, equanimity. So these would be the, you know, Bloom's attitude. And you realize this is the equivalent, although quite different, from Odysseus and his son and killing all the suitors, more than 100. With the aid of Pallas Athene. And there's nothing like that here. It is basically a reason you say, well, it isn't all that bad. What does it matter? And things like that. So these are then Bloom's thing. I don't know where we... I think, can you go on from here? And I forget where we were.
Envy, of a bodily and mental male organism, specially adapted for the superincumbent posture of energetic human copulation and energetic piston and cylinder movement, necessary for the complete satisfaction of a constant but not acute concupiscence, resident in a bodily and mental female organism, passive but not obtuse. Jealousy, because in nature full and volatile in its free state, was alternately the agent and reagent of attraction, because action between agents and reagents at all instants varied with inverse proportion of increase and decrease, with incessant circular extension and radial reentrance, because the controlled contemplation of the fluctuation of attraction produced, if desired, a fluctuation of pleasure. Abnegation, in virtue of A, acquaintance initiated in September 1903 in the establishment of George Mesias, merchant tailor and outfitter, 5 Eden Quay. B, hospitality extended and received in kind, reciprocated and reappropriated in person. C, comparative youth subject to impulses of ambition and magnanimity, collegial altruism and amorous egoism. D, extra-racial attraction, interracial inhibition, superracial prerogative. E, an imminent provincial musical tour, common current expenses, net proceeds divided.
So you have envy of a bodily and mental male organism, so specially adapted for the superincumbent posture, superincumbent lying on top, of energetic human copulation and energetic piston and cylinder movement that is a kind of mechanical equivalent for the complete satisfaction of a constant but not acute concupiscence resident in the bodily and mental female organism, passive but not obtuse. If you describe copulation of arrival in these scientific terms, it takes a bit of the sting out of it. And there were the alternative ways of describing it. So, anyway, so a cool reason can help a bit. Jealousy. Because a nature full and volatile in its free state was alternatively the agent of a reagent of attraction. Obviously. Physical attraction here, because attraction between agents and reagents at all instant varied with inverse proportion of increase and decrease, with incessant circular extension and radical re-entrance. Again, not quite clear, but you know, you try to take the harm out of it, because a controlled contemplation of the fluctuation of attraction. Attraction fluctuates, it doesn't remain the same. If desired, a fluctuation of pleasure. So that's the jealousy. Then we have abnegation. That is giving up in virtue of, and then you have A, B, C, D. Which makes it even more abstract. Initially in September 1903, in the establishment of the Zeus Merchant Taylor Outfit of 5 Key. So Bloom and Boylan seem to have the same tailor, which also shows that Bloom got his suit tailor-made, not from a shop in Key. The hospitality extended and received in kind, reciprocated and reappropriated in person. Now then, obviously, the Blooms and Boylan had some appointments or dinners or whatever. We don't quite know the details. C, comparative youth, subject to impulses of ambition and magnanimity, collegial altruism and amorous egotism. D, extra-racial attraction, intra-racial inhibition, super-racial prerogative, an imminent provincial musical tour. That's the tour that Boylan is arranging with Molly. Common current expenses, net proceeds divided. Here, for the first time, we learn about the monetary setup of this concert tour. I think, can you go on then?
Equanimity. As natural as any and every natural act of a nature expressed or understood, executed in natured nature by natural creatures in accordance with his, her, and their natured natures of dissimilar similarity. As not as calamities, as a cataclysmic annihilation of the planet in consequence of collision with a dark sun, as less reprehensible than theft, highway robbery, cruelty to children and animals, obtaining money under false pretenses, forgery, embezzlement, misappropriation of public money, betrayal of public trust, malingering, mayhem, corruption of minors, criminal libel, blackmail, contempt of court, arson, treason, felony, mutiny on the high seas, trespass, burglary, jailbreaking, practice of unnatural vice, desertion from armed forces in the field, perjury, poaching, usury, intelligence with the king's enemies, impersonation, criminal assault, manslaughter, willful and premeditated murder, as not more abnormal than all other altered processes of adaptation to altered conditions of existence, resulting in a reciprocal equilibrium between the bodily organism and its attendant circumstances, food, beverages, acquired habits, indulged inclinations, significant disease, as more than inevitable, irreparable.
Okay. Equanimity.
That means of a balanced mind, that you're not disturbed. It's a kind of a Roman virtue. The word is also Latin, of course. As natural as any and every natural act of nature expressed, what it's only natural, or understood, executed in nature by natural creatures in accordance with his. Looks philosophical, nature. Her and their nature's dissimilar similarity. Philosophical there. That's not so calamitous as a cataclysmic annihilation of the planet. You know, that might be a bit worse. In consequence of a collision with a dark sun. As less reprehensible, and now here he compares the seriousness of the crime. And here the whole book of criminal acts is obviously recited as less reprehensible than theft, highway robbery, cruelty to children and animals, obtaining money under false pretenses, forgery, embezzlement, misappropriation of public money, betrayal of public trust, malingering, pretending to be mayhem, corruption of minors, criminal libel, blackmail, contempt of court, arson, treason, felony, mutiny on the high seas, trespass, burglary, jailbreaking, fracture of alternations, desertion of all forms in defeat, perjury, poaches, use intelligence with king's enemies, imposing criminal assault, manslaughter, willful and premeditated murder. So you might, which is subjectively, consider what of these things is worse or easier than things. It's a strange kind of mix. It's probably everything that you shouldn't do and for which you could be punished. As not more abnormal than all other parallel processes of adaptation to altered conditions of existence, resulting in a reciprocal equilibrium between the body, the organ, and the extended circumstances. Foods, beverage, acquired habits, indulgence, inclination, significant disease, as more than inevitable, irreparable. You can't do anything against it anyway. So it's somehow trying to think it's not all that bad if you look at it from a distance.
We come to the end. Yeah, good. So. Yeah.
Okay.
Happy Whitsuntide, and see you next Thursday then. Bye bye then.
Bye bye.
Bye.